We want to show student growth, but we can't do it with a flawed test. We want to move towards things like portfolios. And I think
Jesse Agapian, we're going to have to leave it there. We want to thank you, high school history teacher, and Professor Wayne Au, editor of Rethinking Schools, for joining us. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burford, Nate Feltz, Aramata, Nirmi Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcock, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us for Democracy Now!
And that was Democracy Now! Here on WUSB, Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time for Concert Billboard, but there is no Concert Billboard, so we're just going to skip ahead to Off the Wall. Good evening. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, the 29th day of January, 2013. And I'm really digging this new theme. I could sit back and listen to it all day long. It is, I guess, kind of long for a relatively short program. In fact, we're extra short tonight. We're only 45 minutes because there's a basketball game coming up at 6:45, where the Stony Brook men's basketball team journey all the way up to Albany, New York, to settle a score or two. And, yeah, you know, can you imagine if TV shows had themes that lasted that long, or 4 or 5 minutes before anything actually happened, you're just introducing the characters and showing the scenery? It would save a lot of money, I'll bet. You know? And if they're complaining about how much it costs to make television shows, that's one way to cut down a bit. But people don't like that. In fact, they don't even like themes anymore. If you look at a lot of television programs, they don't even have themes. They just basically say the title and get right into it. And I always thought the best television programs were the ones that had long, intricate themes, like The Prisoner, for instance. Can't beat that. Although many have tried. But it's part of progression, I guess, or regression, whichever you prefer. Such as how, at the end of TV programs, not to belabor a point, but they don't show credits anymore. They show them in microscopic print, and they go by so quickly that even if you have freeze frame, you can't make it out. And now the DVDs come like that, too. So, you know, if you work on some kind of production, it's like, thanks, but no thanks. We're not even going to acknowledge you exist. And you just wonder, as the years go by, how much less can they give you? It's almost fascinating just to watch that happen. And, you know, I hate to do this, but I'm going to introduce a new element here. As you can see, our theme, our beautiful new theme, is being hijacked by a different sound. And this is something that I only learned about last week this is really a bit too much. This is exactly what happened. I'm going to say those things I said last week if you don't turn this down a little bit. A little more. All right, too much. All right, that's good. This is something that I know about genres. I know there are musical genres all over the place. I'm not a big fan of musical genres, only because they're so limiting. They basically take a kind of music you might like and then divide it into all these different subcategories. And then you wind up with people who just listen to one particular subgenre and look down on people who listen to other subgenres. And in the end, it's all basically part of the same animal. But rather than listening to a variety of things, let's pick this place as an example, WUSB, where we play all kinds of music around the clock. You limit yourself. You're only listening to one particular thing. This genre is called Stoner Doom. Stoner Doom. I guess I suspected that it was out there. I looked it up. And the reason I looked it up was because I was hanging out with some friends about a week ago, and some wiseacre came up to the jukebox. It's one of these, I don't want to say internet jukeboxes, because it's not really using the internet. It's using a satellite service. And you can get all kinds of music now that you weren't able to get before, because the library is just so much bigger. And so this guy somehow knew that this particular track, which is 65 minutes long, was available on this particular service, and he selected it. And everybody in the place was going mad, wondering when was it ever going to end. And we're going to play it. We're going to relive that experience to the fullest right here on this show. In fact, we're not even going to live it to the fullest, because we're going to get cut off at 6:45, and this song will still be going. Song? Did I call it a song? I don't want to put it down, but it's, you know, a song. Songs have bouncy lyrics, and, well, I guess this does have lyrics. Actually, I want to read some of the lyrics. Maybe they'll start singing along with me. Drop out of life with bong in hand. Follow the smoke toward the rift-filled land. Drop out of life with bong in hand. I said that before. I know. Follow the smoke toward the riff-filled land, basically. That repeats a few times. And then it goes into the whole Holy Mountain Zion thing and gets into some detail about that. But mostly it's this sound of I guess, doom. Yeah, it is kind of a doomy sound. It's described in Wikipedia as often bass-heavy, which makes much use of guitar effects such as fuzz, phaser, or flanger. Stoner doom could be viewed as the heavier and slower form of stoner rock. As the two styles emerged simultaneously, it was pioneered in the early mid-1990s by bands such as Cayuse. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong. I don't know how to pronounce it. Sleep, which is who we're listening to right now, and I think I'm pronouncing that right. Cathedral, Acid King, Electric Wizard, Orange Goblin, and Sons of Otis. And this particular piece is called Dope Smoker, and I just remember looking it up on that jukebox because I had to find out just what in God's... This could be a weapon. This could be something that you use to clear out a place. And again, all due respect, I'm not putting down the music, even though it sounds like I am. It's just, you got to understand, not everybody is into this. Not everybody likes hearing this for over an hour. And, you know, I wish we were on for an hour because we could fill the entire show with this one track. In fact, I'm going to ask the sports guys when they come in if they wouldn't mind for the first 15 minutes of the game just having this playing in the background. But I think I know how that's going to go. So yes, Stoner Doom. You learn something new every week, if you choose to. And there are so many different types of subgenres out there. And they're all great if you listen to other things, if you use it as a learning tool. And most people I know do. Most people I know turn something like this off, turn on classical or turn on ska or jazz or whatnot. But there are people who just listen to one type of a thing, and that's never a good step. Although it is kind of alluring. But we got some, if I can not be too distracted by this, we got some pretty good mail this week. In fact, I'm very happy with the mail we got this week. We had a good amount, and please keep it up. Please keep writing to us, because we do like hearing from listeners, because it tells us that we have listeners, that they're out there. Oh, we see lots of people downloading the show. We know many, many people do that, but we don't know if you're just doing that out of habit or if maybe some process has run amok and can't stop. But when people actually listen and comment, well, that's... makes it all worthwhile. A couple of letters here from Alex. In case this makes you feel any better, I had a 1991 Toyota Tercel a few years ago. Had the same thing happen to me that I described a few weeks ago. While driving down the highway, I had the hood slam into my windshield and stay there. Maybe this is a feature of the Tercels. I don't know. What happened? Was that our CD player or was that the track? Is there a gap in there? Sometimes the CD player ejects things it doesn't like. In fact, in the place that I heard this, the guy running the joint had to basically use executive control and switch to the next song. You can do that with a remote control if you have the power. And I think after about 45 minutes of this, that limit was reached. I think almost every place has that particular remote control where they can skip a song. In fact, I remember this really incredible bar called the Mars Bar in Lower Manhattan. I can say that now because they're gone. It's what I call a gateway bar. It leads to all kinds of things if you choose to go down those roads. But in this particular case, somebody made use of their jukebox, which was an old-fashioned jukebox. It had actual CDs, which I guess is not as old-fashioned as the ones with actual vinyl, but it didn't have this unlimited supply of things coming out of the sky. So they knew what was on their jukebox. And I remember there was, I think it was a Herbie Hancock piece. Yeah, imagine that on the jukebox. And somebody selected it. And within 3 seconds, the guy behind the bar was like, right, and click the thing to skip to the next song. And I just wonder, you know, if you have it on your jukebox, you select it, or somebody there selects it, you shouldn't immediately skip to something else. That was disrespectful. And yes, I'm the one who picked it. That's how I knew what it was. I'm sorry, going back to Alex's letter here. So, yes, he had the hood slam into his windshield and stay there. He says it is a mighty startling experience, to say the least, but I'm glad you were able to deal with the situation like I did and successfully get on the side of the road. I was able to see through a tiny slit on the bottom of my windshield. Yes, as was I. I wonder if you had a similar experience. It's kind of hard to, you know, you're going 55 miles an hour. Hopefully you're not going faster than that. And all of a sudden, you're blind. And you have to come to a stop. You have to make sure the guy in back of you doesn't slam into you. You have to make sure you don't slam into something that you can't see in front of you. And those are the lyrics, by the way. Now, I got to say, and I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy here, but if you're going to have lyrics, shouldn't they be understandable? Can anybody understand this? Well, he's not singing now, I don't think, or moaning, or whatever it is he's doing. But it's not just... here we go. I mean, maybe they're not that important, but I like to think lyrics are one of the most important parts of any song. And it's not confined to this particular subgenre of music. Many types of music, the lyrics are completely unintelligible, very, very difficult to hear. And I just think they should stand out a little more. You know, if you're a good singer, you should be able to do that so that people can actually hear the message, because the music is part of the message, but the lyrics are the other part of the message. And I had to go online and find out what these lyrics actually were saying. I still don't understand them, but at least that's my fault. Anyway, returning to this letter here... Alex said he wanted to share that, and thanks for the show. And Alex, thank you for your letter. Yeah, you know, it's a difficult thing when your hood flies up in the air. Actually, flies up in your face, doesn't fly up in the air. That's an even worse thing. I've heard of that happening, where hoods fly up and fly over the car and hit the car in back of them. Not pleasant. All kinds of horrible things can happen if you really think about it. I just got to be really careful. If I drive the Tercel, I got to make sure it's latched properly. Otherwise, that could happen again. I won't be so lucky next time. Here's a letter from Pat, who writes in concerning a story that we read. I believe a story about dreadlocks. This guy was apparently strangling his girlfriend with his dreadlocks, and the story writer felt compelled to add a sentence at the end of the story to define what dreadlocks were. I found that particularly amusing. Pat writes, "I may be wrong, but I believe writers of stories like that get paid per word, so adding that bit on the end was enough to not get edited out and still get paid for, like padding your references in a high school research paper." And Pat from Seattle, thank you for that letter, and you're probably right. You heard it this time, didn't you? The board fell apart again, 3 weeks in a row, the same exact way. I should just leave, you know what? There, I'm going to leave it on the table, all right? Obviously, this part of the board wants to fall apart, so I'm going to leave it be, because every time I put it back together, it just falls apart again. And it only does it during my show. Either that or it does it during everybody's show and everybody puts it back, in which case the next people can put it back. I'm done. But I'm not done with letters, because there's one more from Dustin who says, "I love the new music enough to send you an email about it." Thank you, Dustin, for that short but concise email about the new theme. And you probably hate this, don't you? Actually, it's not so bad. It grows on you. And that can be said about almost any type of music, I suppose. Even polka. No, I have nothing against polka, but a lot of people do. You know, a lot of people say, "I can't listen to that," or "I can't listen to country," "I can't listen to this particular type of..." And, you know, it's a type of closed-mindedness, because anything that has a musical beat or any kind of musical talent in it is worth listening to. And throughout the ages, every new type of music was always criticized as not being real music. They said that about jazz. They said that about jazz. They said it about rock. They said it about rap. They'll say it about anything new. And that's just something that we have to recognize the signs of and counter them whenever possible, because we might not get it right away. But if you expose yourself to it, look, I went out and I bought this album, you know, based on a weird experience a week ago. And while it may not be my favorite type of music, at least I've learned something. I've learned about stoner doom. And if you know about stoner doom, you're that much more well-prepared to go out into the world. All right, speaking of the world, the world is changing. It's changing faster than we can keep track of it. Who would have thought that we'd be talking about immigration changes of the sort that we're looking at right now, amnesty, as many people are calling it, for illegal aliens, as many people call them. Well, call it what you will, but it represents a fundamental change in the shift of wherever this country has been heading over the past couple of decades. And it certainly seems promising. Now, a bipartisan group of senators yesterday introduced a plan for overhauling U.S. immigration policy. That was one day before President Obama's plan was laid out today. Now, I guess the reason for doing that is so that, they can get bipartisan support before he opens his mouth and all the Republicans say no to whatever it is he says. So if they sort of head him off at the pass, which I'm not sure if they're actually doing that, but if that is the technical term for it, then it's a strategic move to make sure this actually gets through the House and the Senate. Now, the eight senators say their plan will secure the border and provide a path to citizenship that for some undocumented immigrants already in the country. And, of course, critics are saying the citizenship component is granting amnesty for those who entered the country illegally. But, of course, we all have benefited from those people who have entered the country, quote-unquote, illegally, and in the form of having our lawns cut, our children watched over, cheaper products, whatever. And, of course, the people who do this get very little in return and almost no respect. So it's just interesting to see that this is actually coming from both sides of the aisle now, that we're actually talking about this like it's going to happen. I would not have guessed this. I would not have guessed this was something that was even conceivable, not in the current makeup of our political atmosphere. But apparently, after November's election, things are really changing. And I know people are going to say they're not changing enough. Well, they are changing. So either you accept this change and move on to the next change, or you turn your back on it and let it all fall apart. And then we go back to where we were. Your choice. Anyway, the new push for immigration reform follows the devastating poll results for Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney, who in November won only 27% of the Latino vote, which was down from 44% for President George W. Bush in 2004. And 31% for Senator John McCain 4 years ago. So think about that. That dramatic slide, it was a dramatic slide, jolted key Republicans to act quickly on the complex and emotional issue that has divided the parties for years. Now, Republicans long have argued that Latino voters, many of whom are Catholic and pro-life, would find a home in the GOP if not for the harsh rhetoric some Republicans use to debate the illegal immigration topic. Democrats also are under pressure to reach a deal. Many Latino voters were disappointed that President Obama didn't work harder in his first term to pass a bill. Immediately after his election, Latino leaders pushed the president to make sure it would be a priority for his second term. As a signal of how important the issue is for Senate Democrats, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid announced last week an immigration reform bill would be labeled S1, meaning it's Senate Bill number 1 of the new Congress, clearly a top priority. I can understand him now. I guess that's it. Could any of this Senate plan be a starting point for compromise with the House, they ask. Many House Republicans have called for strengthening border security and insist that the issue be the top priority before any steps are taken to grant citizenship to those in the United States illegally. But the bipartisan immigration framework from the Senate ties the two issues together to attract support from both parties. If House Republicans attempt to separate these, it could jeopardize the chance for comprehensive immigration reform. So we're looking at a situation where finally, this problem could be behind us. And maybe there will actually be a way that people can become citizens easier where they won't have to enter the country illegally. And they'll be treated fairly when they do get here, given a decent wage and health care, all kinds of nice things like that. It's something worth considering anyway. But yeah, change. It's happening. happening all around us. Not all the change is good. Not all change is a good thing, and not just in this part of the world, but I've been following what's been happening in Russia, and it's simply unbelievable with their anti-gay bills. Yeah, they're passing bills to make it virtually illegal to be gay in Russia. And you look at where things are in this country and other countries in Europe and throughout the world, and you see things moving in a totally different direction, and then you hear about something like this. Now, Ilya Komonovsky, who is straight, stood outside Russia's lower house of parliament to protest the anti-gay bill that's being passed there. He avoided arrest, but on Monday, when he went to the school where he teaches ninth grade biology, he was fired. Yeah. While many countries, including the United States, are fighting discrimination based on sexual orientation, Russia seems intent on intensifying it. And on Friday, as Komonovsky stood in the freezing cold, the State Duma passed the first reading of a bill prohibiting distribution of gay propaganda to minors. I have no idea what that even means. Gay propaganda. What kind of gay propaganda do you hand out to minors, anyway? You know, it's not like army recruiting, is it? Yeah. Opponents fear it could also make gay pride marches, demonstrations for gay rights, and public displays of affection illegal. In fact, I was watching some really startling footage of just such a demonstration, where people were demonstrating publicly signs of affection, and they were attacked mercilessly, beaten bloody by these goons who were not even touched by the police. It's as easy as that. Hold someone's hand of the same sex in Russia, you will be beaten. Now, these are the guys that we're going to say it's okay to have the World Cup and the Olympics next year. How about some ramifications for treating people inhumanely? It's disgusting to see this kind of thing happen. And, you know, I was thinking about this. We've been talking over the last few weeks about the changes that are taking place, the other changes in this country as far as the gun debate, based on the horrible events of December. And you wind up looking back at the way things used to be, where we weren't quite so, I don't know what the word is, advanced maybe? It's not the right word, because in many ways we're not advanced at all. But we looked upon things in a certain way back in the 70s, the 60s, the 50s. And this could have been us. What we're seeing in Russia, this could have been us a mere 20 years ago. And in that same way, we look at the gun debate and how people are demanding that they have their assault weapons and things like that. And, you know, if we just fight the battle and have the conversation, 20 years from now, we'll look back and say, wow, I can't believe we were there. I can't believe that was us. But we got through it. We got somewhere better. So it's interesting to just watch this happening in other places and wanting to shake them and say, don't you see why this is wrong? And realizing that it doesn't come that easily. You have to go through the whole process. And unfortunately, that's what's happening over there now. Hopefully the process can go quickly. I think that really is up to the people over there. Now, Moscow already bans gay pride parades on the grounds that they might set off public disorder. Isn't that great? Now, the Duma voted 338-1 for the bill. Not exactly close. 338-1. And one deputy abstained. 52 avoided voting one way or another. One person voted against it. A member of the ruling United Russia Party justified his yes vote by saying, "We live in Russia, not Sodom and Gomorrah." The national bill follows the passage of similar laws in St. Petersburg, Novosibirsk, and three other cities, tapping into an ideology promoted by President Vladimir Putin and his circle that combines anti-Westernism, Russian exceptionalism, and conservative Orthodox religious beliefs. This is part of a concentrated effort by the Russian authorities to create a new political cleavage between the conservative pro-Putin majority and the more liberal pro-Western minority. They have to invent issues around which such a cleavage can be manufactured, says Grigory Golosov, the project director for the Center of Democracy and Human Rights, St. Petersburg. In the long run, this could prove a challenge for Putin. History shows it's difficult to manufacture such a rupture. In the short term, there's no doubt the anti-gay law will pass. It's pretty sad. They threaten to burn us alive, say Russian gay activists. Not a good time to be gay in Russia. Friday, the Russian parliament gave the initial backing to that law. And the nationwide bill has galvanized lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender activists to organize protests in various Russian cities, during which they were targeted, sometimes very violently, by nationalist and Orthodox militants. You gotta wonder, why are they so scared? Why are they so violent? What is they're afraid of exactly? I've asked the same questions in this country and never really got a satisfactory answer, but I was happy to see that particular argument recede into the background and eventually, hopefully, one day disappear altogether. Now, are those pushing the proposed law, which is most prominently the powerful Russian Orthodox Church, applaud the promotion of traditional Russian and Orthodox values in the face of Western values? The Kremlin also seeks to increase the national birth rate, which has been in free fall since the end of the USSR. You know, forcing people not to be gay, that's not the way to do that. Really isn't. Unbelievable. I'm sorry, I hit the volume. Didn't mean to do that. I really didn't mean to do that. And when did being gay become a Western thing? You know, it's not exactly a Western value. It's a human value. It's incredible how religious people all throughout the world can't seem to come to terms with reality, which I guess makes sense when you consider what it is they espouse, but still, come on. At least make an attempt. I respect any religion that respects other religions or other people that aren't part of their religion, and I'm not seeing that here. Andrei is a gay rights activist who participated in a protest in Voronezh. I cannot pronounce that. Voronezh. I'm going to say it that way. I hope that's close to right. He wrote in his blog, "I've been taking part in LGBT rights events since 2010 in St. Petersburg and in Moscow, but I've never been attacked like I was in Voronezh." I'd be attacked there just for butchering the name. "When the hundreds of people take to the streets with nationalist and Orthodox slogans in a large crowd, they start behaving like animals. I was hit by some people. I had barely arrived. I had just seen them greeting each other with Nazi salutes. I took out my sign that read, 'Stop Hatred,' and was immediately punched to the ground. Then someone started kicking me in the head and the neck before running away. I was then brought to a police car, which took me away from the protest. I only saw the other activists get beat up on video footage. No one was grievously hurt, but three of us had large bruises and open wounds. Now, after the protest, I received hundreds of threats on social networks. 'Die, you dirty whore. If you try again, I will burn you alive. You will not find a single safe place for you on Russian soil. Get out of here, you fag. If I see you, I will break your teeth,' and so on. My picture and contact information are circulating online. As a result, I no longer leave my house by myself. I always call a cab. I am desperate. Can you imagine how desperate I must be when I choose to go to a protest, though I know I might very well be killed? The police will never protect us. I'm under no illusions on that front. The police reported that there had not been any violence during the protest, and they received thank you letters from our attackers for not intervening. But I will keep on fighting. With help from human rights activists, we filed a complaint with the Interior Ministry and the city of Voronezh. I have also been contacted by a non-profit, Frontline Defenders, which is preparing appeals to the Russian government, the Council of Europe, and the United Nations. We need to support these people in any way possible. We need to make sure that their voices are heard over here. And we need to put pressure on the government over there. And, you know, taking away the World Cup is one way to do that. Taking away the Olympics is another way to do that. Because that's how we fought South Africa. You know, we isolated them in the world of sports, and that really hurts. Really hurts a lot. I want to recommend something. I found this by accident, actually, on the web. Turns out a 14-year-old kid in Vermont, along with his dad and classmates, made this film. And it's about this kind of thing. It's about what goes on still in school today in this country, where kids are ostracized for appearing gay. And it takes a lot of guts for somebody in that particular crowd, in high school, junior high school, to go out, not to mention a lot of talent, go out and make a film about exactly that. And if you go to the Big Apple Short Film Collection, which is BigAppleFilmFestival.com, and search for a film called One Voice, you can see the whole thing. It's 15 minutes long. And it's not, I guess, a mainstream film by any stretch, but it's something that any one of us can play a part in, one way or another, wherever our talents happen to be. And I think it's amazing to see somebody step forward and do something like that. And also to have all of these classmates participate as well. It shows that our world around here certainly is changing. This never could have happened when I was growing up. Well, not to mention you couldn't make a film, except maybe on High 8 or something when I was growing up. But this kind of stepping up, speaking out, would not have been encouraged. Would have been more similar to what Russia is today. And again, this is something that needs to be encouraged, needs to be supported. And I hope a thousand other kids do the same thing. All right, another disturbing development. There's been significant brain activity in Ariel Sharon. Yeah, you thought he was dead. You thought that Israeli, the former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon died 7 years ago. And I'm not a big fan of his, because he kind of started the Second Intifada by going to holy ground and kind of provoking Palestinians, and he's been responsible for some massacres, and overall not a very nice guy. That said, I don't wish him harm. And I'm joking when I say it's an ominous sign that there's brain activity. Think about it. 7 years in a coma. The guy's been in a coma for 7 years, and they just found out now. And I say they just found out because they didn't do these tests before, where they basically showed him pictures of random houses, and then a picture of his house. And when his house was shown to him, areas of his brain lit up with activity. And people were speaking gibberish. I wonder what that was like in front of him. And then they started speaking. What language did they speak? I'm not sure if they spoke English or Hebrew. But whatever language they spoke, it was an actual language he understood. And again, his brain responded. That means he could have been aware of things going on for 7 years in a coma. Can you imagine that? He's 84 years old, suffered a devastating stroke January 4th, 2006, and a brain hemorrhage. He was presumed to be in a vegetative state. But yesterday, a team of surprise neuroscientists and doctors said Sharon's brain appeared to respond when they showed him pictures of his family, had him listen to his son's voice. So, beware. The Lion of God, as he was once called, could wake up. And the sequel to that film may yet be written. But no, I find it fascinating that such a medical condition can occur to somebody. And I feel very sorry for someone who could have been trapped in his own head for that long. And I do hope he comes out of it, because it would be an interesting conversation, to say the least. And everybody, even monsters, deserve humane treatment. All right, you know, good news for those of you out there that have been jonesing for Twinkies. Apparently, Hostess is getting close to approving a buyer. It's down between Purina and Getty. No, I'm kidding. It's down between, McKee Foods Corporation has already agreed to buy the Drake's brand. It gets sort of complicated here. Drake's was owned by Hostess, but it was a competing brand, even though they were owned by the same people. And of course, Drake's, if you do your research, if you study the subject matter that we present here, Drake's made ring dings, yodels, devil dogs, Yankee doodles, as well as, of course, the coffee cake. And apparently they were able to buy all the rights to that only for $27.5 million. That's not that much. I mean, it's a lot for us, but it's not that much in the corporate world. $27.5 million, and you get all of that. Of course, they still have to make it, but the rights to have those names must be worth more than that. And then earlier this month, Flowers Foods agreed to buy six of Hostess's bread brands. It's hard to say. Hostess's bread brands, including Wonder. Yeah, Wonder Bread's going to come back. Nature's Pride and Beefsteak. I don't even know what that is. That's bread, beefsteak? Why would you call bread that? Kind of alienates the vegetarian community right there. And bread is one thing they can eat, so why do that? Unless it has meat in it somehow. Anyway, they paid $390 million for that. And Flowers Foods, in case you haven't heard of them, they own Nature's Own and Tasty Cake. Yeah, Tasty Cake, the other bakery that doesn't really come into this state very much. So now they will own part of what Hostess used to do. Yeah. Now, the company that supposedly is interested in buying the Twinkies name, which I guess is the big one. Is that also in the key? Yeah, they're known for their Little Debbie brand of snacks. Actually, you know what? I'm wrong. It was not in the key. It's these other companies called Apollo Global Management. That doesn't sound like a very nice bakery name. And C. Dean Metropolis and Company. They're the likely winners of this round of negotiations to buy Twinkies. So Metropolis owns Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, among other things. And we don't know what the people at Apollo Global Management own, but interesting times in the world of crap, which is what that stuff is. There are other things to talk about, but you know what? We're out of time, and basketball's coming up in just a couple of minutes. Of course, this Stoner Doom will go on and on and on. You can't stop it. You can't stop it. This is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll be back again next week with a full hour. And on tomorrow night and Off the Hook. Again, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Stay tuned for basketball. Good night.